Welcome to Blog Talk Radio in high fidelity.
Gator, for the next 90 minutes, we're going to be talking sports and having fun doing it. I want all your ideas, all your opinions, and all your beliefs.
And of course, as always, you're going to get a heavy dose of my opinion. You have an opinion, number to call,
646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You can listen to the show, blogtalkradio.com/begin. Send messages to the show on Twitter, at Go For Again. And while you're there, at Go For Again, GoForItGant, give me a follow, at Go For Again. Great show lined up for you today. Expected to be joined by Bengals running back Rex Burkhead. Rex is going to talk about the Bengals big 32-14 victory over the Philadelphia Eagles. Also, Dolphins wide receiver Jakeem Grant will be joining us. And we're going to talk about the Dolphins' tough loss, but we're also going to talk about the Dolphins' upcoming game against the Arizona Cardinals and also Jakeem Grant. He has a great story, interesting story, and we're going to talk about that. So let's get right down to it. Last night was one of the few Thursday night football games. Actually, the last two Thursday night football games have been good. They've been actually pretty good. I mean, you look at Minnesota and the Cowboys, decent football game, a football game that came down to the end, a football game between two, well, at least one very good football team and a Vikings team right now that is struggling. And now you look at last night and what we saw the Oakland Raiders go against the Kansas City Chiefs. And we saw a football game where, you know, a lot was at stake. You know, obviously, if the Chiefs win, they're on top of the AFC West. Raiders win, you know, they take complete control of the AFC West and seemingly are en route to possibly getting the best record and home field advantage throughout the AFC. But it didn't happen last night for the Raiders. And if you look at that particular football game, the Chiefs, Alex Smith did some things down the field, but if you look at their football game, it was about what they did. It was that second quarter. The Chiefs had a very good second quarter. You know, they did a great job in that second quarter offensively. They scored points offensively. That was it. I mean, after scoring those points in that second quarter, that offense pretty much was done. I mean, they scored their 21 in the second quarter, and then offensively, they were done. That was it. And the key to this particular football game, if you look at this particular football game, you look at the Raiders and that prolific offense. Well, that prolific offense was set up with some big-time field position in that third quarter, down 21-10. You had the interception that set up, well, it was a field goal. They had an opportunity there. It was deep in Chiefs territory, but the Chiefs defense held and did what they needed to do. And then you had another situation. You had the strip sack by Khalil Mack that also put the Raiders in prime position. And in that situation, they tried to kick a field goal. The snap was high. Marquette King had to run the ball, and they didn't get anything out of that. So you were in those. Well, they had three turnovers the Raiders had, and those turnovers ended up in 9 points. But they were kicking field goals instead of scoring touchdowns. And anytime you're kicking field goals instead of scoring touchdowns, you're going to run into some problems. And if also the key to these two football games, meaning the Chiefs' two games against the Raiders, game one, you hold that Raiders offense to 10 points. Game two, you hold that Raiders offense to 13 points. And in game two, the Raiders had short fields on numerous drives, at least three deep Chiefs territory. This is a Raiders offense, a Raiders team that averages 27 points per game. This Kansas City Chiefs defense held the Raiders offense to 23 points in two games. Not one, but two football games where you held the Raiders to 23 points and only 23 points. The reality of the situation is this at this point in time. The Chiefs are playing some good football. The Chiefs are getting it done. But my thing about the Kansas City Chiefs is not what you see in the regular season, because they've been 20-3 over the past 23 games. 20-3. So the reality is they're going to do their thing in the regular season. That's the reality of the situation. They're going to do their things in the regular season. And so, the thing comes, when it comes to the Chiefs, is what happens when we get in the playoffs? What happens when Alex Smith needs to win a game? And I know he won a game against the Broncos there where he drove the team down. The team was down 8. He drove them down. He scored a touchdown. They also got the 2-point conversion. They sent it to overtime, and ultimately they won. But when the pressure is on Alex Smith, it's going to happen. Alex Smith is a good quarterback. You could do a lot worse than Alex Smith. Alex Smith has gotten it done for the Kansas City Chiefs over the past few seasons. It's now time for Alex Smith and this Chiefs football team, who right now, if the playoffs were to start today, would have the second seed and would have a bye. But it's time for Alex Smith and this Chiefs football team to take that next level, and that's to have that playoff success. That's to be – well, last year they got to the divisional round, and they gave the Chiefs a tough they gave the Patriots a tough football game. They gave the Patriots a tough football game. And in doing so, and giving that Chiefs – giving that Patriot team a tough football game, you know, the Chiefs, they're a good football team, obviously. And they've always been a good football team since Andy Reid and Alex Smith have gotten together. But the time and the question becomes with this football team is what happens – when playoff time comes, what can this offense do if they need to make the necessary plays? What can this offense do if they need to make the plays necessary for this team to be successful? It doesn't matter to me what the Chiefs do in the regular season. They've always been good in the regular season under Andy Reid and Alex Smith. They've always been good in the regular season when it came to Marty Schottenheimer, you know, in his time in Kansas City. So the Chiefs at this point, in terms of the playoffs, season would end today, they would get that bye. Yesterday game was huge. They get the bye, and now the Raiders, who were at 1, go all the way to 5. All the way to 5. And that means, for the most part, if you're 5, you're going to be on the road if you want to go where you want to go. That's just the reality of the situation. And I think this Raider team can travel. You know, they were 5-0 on the road before last night. So they were pretty successful on the road. They didn't have much problems on the road. But last night, they came up against a Chiefs team that may have their number. That Chiefs team may have their number. And so It's going to be interesting to see what happens the rest of the way. It's going to be a dogfight in that AFC West. If you look at the Chiefs' final three games, they're also going to have to find a way to replace Derek Johnson. But you look at their final three. Titans, who are playing okay, decent football. Denver, and then at the Chargers. And the Chargers are always a tough football team. They're always going to be a tough football game. That's a team that easily could be on top of the AFC West. You know, all the games and they've given up late, and all the leads they've given up late in football games, and all the crazy ways they lost late in football games. But I look at this game. Last night, it was a good football game, but it was Chiefs football. You know, they relied on their defense. Their offense did some things in that second quarter. You know, obviously you get that kick with that punt return. And when getting that punt return, obviously that was huge. Tyreek Hill giving you that punt return. That dude's electrifying, by the way. That dude is just shot out of the cannon sometimes. Woo! He's electrifying. But anyway, you have a situation now where the Chiefs now have control in that AFC West. And now the Raiders, and looking at their final three, I mean, they got at San Diego, Indy coming to Oakland, and then at Denver. So it's going to be interesting to see how this thing is going to end. It's going to be interesting to see who takes control of the AFC West. It was going to be interesting to see how this thing ends, but it's going to be fun. Going to be a fun last 3 weeks in the AFC West. And we'll see what that looks like, and we'll see what's going to happen. But I look at this game, that game last night, and I got to say Andy Reid, you know. Say what you want to say about Andy Reid and what's happened over the years in Philly and, you know, not getting it done in some of those NFC Championship games, 4 to be exact. Ultimately not getting it done once you get to the Super Bowl against the Patriots. Say what you want about Andy Reid. He is a very good coach. Great coach. Maybe you need a Super Bowl for that. But he's done everything but win a Super Bowl in two destinations. Granted, we'll see what happens with Kansas City in terms of where they're going to go next, in terms of how far, how deep they can get in this playoff. They could easily get to the AFC title game. They're going to be a tough team. They're going to be a tough out, especially what they do defensively. And, you know, we'll see how that plays out for the Kansas City Chiefs. But a good Thursday night football game, which is always good. I mean, everybody is talking bad, talking negative, not talking very good about Thursday night football, including myself. I can live without it. But it's good to get a good Thursday night game. Even though I can live without it, it's good to get a good Thursday night football game. And we got that last night in Kansas City. We're going to bring in a guy now, Rex Burkhead. You know, Cincinnati Bengals, it's been a struggle for the Cincinnati Bengals throughout the course of the season. This was a football team I had going to the Super Bowl. I thought they were going to break through, but it didn't happen. Well, it hasn't happened to this point. It's going to be granted we're not even at the playoffs, but it's going to take darn near a miracle for the Kansas City Chiefs Cincinnati Bengals to get to the Super Bowl. Excuse me, get to the playoffs for that matter, let alone the Super Bowl. But we're going to bring in now Rex Burkhead, who helped the Cincinnati Bengals beat the Philadelphia Eagles last Sunday. Let's bring him in now. Bengals running back, Rex Burkhead. Rex, how are you?
I'm doing great. How you doing?
Doing well. Thanks for joining us. And Rex, big victory by you guys. Dominating fashion against the Philadelphia Eagles. You guys are back to your winning ways. How'd you do it?
We executed. That's kind of what it came down to. We played a complete game. You know, I felt like finally we did in all three phases. As a team, we felt like that. And, you know, Andy Dalton did a great job. He led us offensively throughout the whole game, had an MVP performance. We end up, you know, getting it done at the end of the day.
So is this the most complete performance of the year?
Definitely, I would say, you know, as far as offense, defense, and special teams goes, it's definitely the most complete win for us. We knew we could do it. We have the talent to do it and, you know, definitely the team and character to do it. So we just been waiting for a game like this and, you know, stinks that it's kind of later in the season, but, you know, it's good to do it.
So you guys broke your three-game losing streak and Rex. You were a big part of this victory, 66 yards from scrimmage against the Philadelphia Eagles. Talk about your performance.
Yeah, it was fun. You know, just to mix it up in the passing and run game. You know, I felt like the offensive line did a great job in the run game. And, you know, Andy did a good job just checking the ball down to me in the passing game. And just try to make the most of the opportunities I got whenever they were there and help the team win in whatever way.
We're talking to Bengals running back Rex Burkhead. And Rex, it's been a tough year for you guys. Everything that could go wrong pretty much has gone wrong for you guys in terms of injuries and in terms of losses. Put into words 2016 at this point in the year.
Yeah, you know, it's been a up and down season for sure. You know, we've been trying to find, I guess, our identity as a team and try to find or get into a little rhythm. And, you know, it's been tough. It really has. You know, since I've been here, we've made the playoffs every year, and we've always started off hot. And, you know, I always had to be in a position to make the playoffs. So this year's been different, and, you know, it's something I'm not used to and this team's not used to. And we're just trying to find our focus and our identity, I guess you could say. And going forth now, hopefully the Eagles game gives us some momentum.
So obviously, Rex, I mean – no one wants to see anybody injured, but Gio Bernard going down did open up the door for you to get some more opportunities. Talk about your performance at this point in the season.
Yeah, you know, like you said, Gio went down, and it's tough to see that. You never want to see a guy like that, a leader on your team, to go down. And he's one of my good friends on the team and good buddies, so that was tough. There's a lot of mixed emotions. Just because I knew I would have an opportunity coming off of that. And that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to make the most of it now and do the best I can.
Now, Rex, this is a contract year for you. You will be a free agent at the end of the year. Going into the season and, you know, going through these final four games, did you have extra motivation?
Oh, definitely. You know, I try not to think about it, but, I mean, it kind of stays in the back of your mind. And, you know, you think about it, and all you can do is hope to put some good tape out there, some good plays, and, you know, either the Bengals or someone else likes that. But at the same time, you know, we're still not out of the playoff hunt, and, you know, I'm doing my best to get this team some wins.
We're talking to Bengals running back Rex Burkhead. And Rex, over the years, you played a little wide receiver. You also played a little running back. Better wide receiver or better running back? Are you a better wideout or a better running back?
I'd say running back, all-purpose back. Okay. That way you cover both. This is what I've always played. I've always played running back since I was a kid, and, you know, it's what comes most natural to me. And so I don't mind splitting out, doing receiver or, you know, run the ball as well. So I like the best of both worlds.
So now, Rex, you guys travel to Cleveland to play your former OC, Hugh Jackson, and the Cleveland Browns. They are 0-12, but they do play hard. How do you guys keep it going against the Browns?
Yeah, just through preparation throughout this week. I felt like we've had some great practices, and, you know, we're just going to have to execute it on Sunday. We know he's going to have them ready to go, and, you know, it's going to be a great game, you know, big-time game for them. They haven't, like you said, they haven't got a win yet, and, you know, they're going to be hungry for one. So we're going to have to come ready to play.
So let me ask you this. I know the Browns are in your division, but they are 0-12. And your former OC, Hugh Jackson, is with Cleveland. Do you feel a little sorry for your former coach, Hugh Jackson?
Yeah, he was, you know, he's a great coach. He's my running back coach when I first got to Cincinnati. And someone I really learned a lot from the game. And, you know, anytime you have a coach that gets an opportunity somewhere else, you're always rooting for him. And the same goes if you have a teammate that gets an opportunity somewhere else. You're always rooting for him. And, you know, it's tough to see him go through that right now. And because you wish the best for him and hope everything goes well. And, you know, hopefully not on Sunday. You don't want him to turn around. But hopefully he can turn it around, you know, on at the end of the season.
So you want to add to his misery on Sunday. So, Rex, last week we saw a lot of NFL players wearing different type of cleats to support their individual causes. Talk about the cleats that Rex Burkhead wore last Sunday against the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yeah, my cleats were supporting the Team Jack Foundation, which helps fund research for pediatric brain cancer. And it all started with a boy that I met in Nebraska, Jack Hoffman. He was 6 years old at the time. We met in 2011. He was diagnosed with an inoperable brain tumor. And, you know, we kept in touch. We kept in touch. And his family, they ended up starting up a foundation called the Team Jack Foundation. And they've now raised over $3 million in helping, you know, fight pediatric brain cancer. So, it's been awesome to be a part of, and, you know, that's what I chose to...
Now, Rex, obviously we look at the final four games of the year. I mean, you guys still have a shot to make the playoffs. It's a long shot, but it's still a shot nonetheless. You need the Steelers to go 1-3. You need the Ravens to go 1-3. And you do play the Steelers once, and you do play the Ravens once. All in all, how do you guys approach these final four games?
Yeah, just with the every game, every day mentality. That's all we can do. We can't worry about future games or what's happening on going on in other games. We just got to focus on ourselves and you know what we need to do to accomplish to win games, win a game on a game by game basis. And that's all we can ask from ourselves. And whatever happens, happens.
So Rex, Christmas is around the corner. You know, you're an NFL football player. So you got a lot of things, but what does Rex Burkhead want for Christmas?
Not too much, honestly. I haven't asked for much, just a couple clothes here and there, but normally I'm not a very high maintenance guy. And, I'm easy to shop for.
All right. So the family of Rex Burkhead, make sure you get this guy something nice for Christmas coming up. In a few weeks. So fans, make sure you go to Twitter and support this man at RBrex2022. That's RBrex2022. Also, go to the Team Jack. Go to TeamJackFoundation.org, TeamJackFoundation.org, and support that great cause and support all the great things going on with Rex Burkhead. Rex, absolute pleasure talking to you. Wish you nothing but the best of luck moving forward. Would love to do it again.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Take care.
Yeah, you too. Appreciate it.
Rex Burkhead, running back for the Cincinnati Bengals. Absolute pleasure talking to him. And, I mean, I guess anything is possible. But it's going to be tough for the Bengals to go where they want to go. And that ultimately is the playoffs. But as I said, it's a long shot, but it is a shot nonetheless. So you can't, while it's long, it is a shot. We'll see if they can turn around. I mean, it's been an absolute struggle. I mean, you lose your best wide receiver. You know, your best, maybe your best player on the football team in A.J. Green. And then, obviously, you lose Giovanni Bernard, which is also a tough pill to swallow and a tough player to lose. We'll see what happens. Let's look at Klay Thompson. I mean, Dude was absolutely amazing. Amazing the other night. I mean, 60 points. 21 for 33. 8 for 14 from downtown. 60-point outburst in only 29 minutes. 60 and 29. Wow. And, you know, I'm just looking at some of the numbers. And if we're looking at Will Chamberlain's 100-point game. So Klay Thompson with 60 and 29 minutes was basically 2.07 points per minute. In comparison, look at Wilt Chamberlain's 100-point game. It was 2.08 in 48 minutes. Wow. Wow. Crazy. Also look at it. Looking at Kobe's 81-point game. Klay Thompson's point per minute was better than Kobe's. Kobe's was at 1.98. Klay was at 2.07. And he had better efficiency. 63.6, 60% for Kobe. If you remember Kobe's 81-point game, the Raptors were up for most of that game, I believe. And the Lakers started to take off, and Kobe started to take off there in that third. And ultimately, he went on to get those 81. But, man, if Klay Thompson, at the rate he was going, the way he was playing, and, you know, what he was doing, there was a possibility that he could possibly have gotten 80. If that game was a little closer, he may have gotten 80. And then you ask, I mean, he got 16 and three quarters. And then you ask, well, okay, what is the benefits of leaving him in there with the possibility that maybe the Pacers might come at him? You know what I mean? It may, you know, still some type of way. Because we all know the final score is, what, 142 to 104. So 38-point beatdown. 36-point beatdown. 142-106. So a 36-point beatdown. So it was amazing. It was amazing. I mean, and then just looking at some of the more statistics that come from this game. In terms of touches, Steph had 64, Draymond had 53, Klay had 46 touches. Wow. And then, I mean, it's amazing. It's just amazing. It's just absolutely amazing what Klay Thompson did the other night in 29 minutes. I would love to have seen him keep going, obviously, because I like to see history. Because, I mean, Kobe's 81 was truly, truly amazing. That was amazing. I didn't watch that game, but I remember waking up, working at ESPN at the time, out there in beautiful Bristol, Connecticut. But I remember waking up, turning on SportsCenter, and seeing Kobe Bryant, seeing that he had scored 81 points, and stunned. Absolutely stunned, thinking no one could ever score 81 points. And then with this particular basketball game, same deal. Woke up, 60 points. And then I saw those 60 points in only 29 minutes. Only 29 minutes. Wow. And so, what an amazing performance. He's putting up some big time numbers and doing some big time things.
And so we'll see what happens with these Warriors. Obviously, interesting basketball game the other night with the Warriors and the LA Clippers. And the thing was, with that particular football game, the Clippers, obviously the team's been playing some pretty good basketball throughout the course of the season, off to a big-time start with it, 14-2 at one point. Now they're 16-7. So they got off to a great start, but they're starting to level off a little bit at this point in time. But you had the Clippers and the Warriors in a game that you thought the Clippers would really like to show the Warriors some things and show the Warriors that they're here. Well, didn't necessarily work out that way. Golden State went into L.A. and dominated the Clippers, knocked the Clippers off, and showed the Clippers, guess what? You're not ready yet. You're still not ready yet. But I look at this basketball team, and even though they got off to the great start, even though they have obviously a level of talent, not just a level of talent, a very good level, lots of talent. Chris, Paul, DeAndre, Jordan, Blake Griffin. You still have some talented guys. But I think I almost look at this Clippers team as a better version of those Hawks teams we've seen over the years. Those Hawks teams were good basketball teams. Teams that maybe can win a round, if you're lucky, maybe two. But a team that you knew at the end of the day had no shot of winning an NBA title. Now, the Clippers are more talented than those Hawks teams and over the years. But at the same time, the Clippers are just not talented enough. Just not talented enough. And they beat the San Antonio Spurs a couple of years back in the playoffs. But at this point in time, they're not talented enough to beat the San Antonio Spurs, I don't think, in the seven-game series. They're not talented enough, ultimately, to beat the Golden State Warriors. Now, right now, they may be talented enough to win a round and might be talented enough. Well, I don't think they would beat the Spurs in the second round. Because that's the way it's shaping up at this point. It's still early. A lot of basketball to be played. But the way it's shaping up at this point, I don't think they beat the Spurs, but I think they give the Spurs a good series. So as it stands with the Clippers, they're probably going to win a round. Probably going to win a round. And that's about it. Anything else, I don't see it happen. I mean, it's just... they're good. They have good talent. You got CP3, arguably the best point guard in the game. Got Blake, big-time power forward. One of the better power forwards in the game. You got DeAndre Jordan, one of the better centers in the game. But at the end of the day, we say all that. But I got to say this. You're not beating the Golden State Warriors in a seven-game series. You're not. You're probably not going to beat the San Antonio Spurs in a seven-game series. You probably will get out of the first round. You probably will get out of the first round. And in getting out of the first round, you're probably going to have to face San Antonio Spurs. And while I don't think it's impossible for the LA Clippers to beat the San Antonio Spurs in a seven-game series, I just don't think it's likely. I don't think it's likely. It's not impossible. It's just not likely. And so that's going to be interesting. And you wonder if the Clippers have another disappointing playoff run.
Do you think at this point they'll finally try to break this thing up? I think at this point, I don't think this group is going to take you to the championship. It's going to take you to the NBA Finals and beyond. I don't think this group is championship caliber. I just don't. And I think the Clippers should think long and hard. I thought maybe they should have broken up last year. But I think they should think long and hard and figure out what they want to do next and where they want to go next and how they want to do this thing. Because in San Antonio, you know, even without Tim Duncan, and obviously Tim Duncan wasn't Tim Duncan, you know, that we all knew and loved, but they found a way to retool. Kawhi has stepped up. You know, LaMarcus Aldridge stepping up, you know, and bringing him in, a big-time free agent acquisition. So you still are okay in San Antonio. And the reality is the Warriors are going to be there, and they're going to be there, and they're going to be there. So you have to figure out if you're the Clippers, how are you going to do it? How are you going to do it? How are you going to fix it? Because you're not championship caliber at this point in time. And I don't know if you will ever be championship caliber with the way things are going now for your basketball team. It is what it is. I think they've tried. I think they've tried, and I think they've tried again. But I think it's now incumbent upon Doc Rivers, Clipper management, to figure out that next step. Because at this point, the way they're going, it's going and it's looking like another second-round exit. Another second-round exit. So we'll see what happens. We'll see what the Clippers do. We'll see what Doc Rivers and these guys do moving forward. CP3 ain't getting any younger. You know, Blake Griffin ain't getting any younger. It's not. I mean, you look at CP3 now, 31, 11 years in the league. You know, how much good basketball does he have left? How much championship caliber basketball does he have left? Blake Griffin, still young, 27, still can give you a lot. I mean, where do you go? Is it, do you try to move Chris Paul? Is that the chip, the piece that you move? Or do you try to move Blake? You got to move somebody. This current Clipper roster is not going to get you a championship. It's not. So I think the Clippers and Doc Rivers, if you don't realize it now, needs to realize it soon. You gotta realize it soon, and you gotta realize when to move forward, when to stick and stay, and when to move forward. It's time for the Clippers to stop sticking and staying and move forward. We'll see what that forward looks like. Or maybe they just stay and do, you know, whatever they want to do and maybe try to win it one last time with this group. But I don't think you can go past this. This year, I don't think you can go past this year. And you got to disappoint it if you exit early. I think if you exit in the second round, you got to figure some things out. We'll see what Doc does. We'll see what Doc does. There's a big game tonight in the NBA with the Clippers, not the Clippers, with the Thunder and the Rockets. And I said this before, but can you believe? At one point in time, James Harden and Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant were all on the same roster at one point in time. Oh, by the way, Serge Ibaka. And this group, that group, ultimately got you to the NBA Finals. And then you ran into some issues in terms of guys getting hurt. And they're hurt, whether it was Ibaka or whether it was Westbrook. It's killed you. Killed you. And then you made that Harden trade. A trade in hindsight. I mean, if you look at it, the reality is they chose Serge Ibaka over James Harden. Right move? I don't know. It's just a lot of bad luck in OKC. And then last year you had a 3-1 lead with Westbrook and Durant, and you blow that. But here's the thing. I can't believe, first, it's hard to believe, you know, you're talking about 1, 2, 3 out of the top 10 players in the game together in OKC at one point in time. I don't think you could ever say that about the big three in Miami. Like Chris Bosh, was he a top 10 player at the time? I don't think so. And D-Wade, he was hanging on in terms of being in the top 10. I don't think you can say that. Could you have said that about the Boston big three 2008? I don't think so. I don't think those guys were all arguably top 10 players in the league. I don't think so. You could have said that about this Thunder team if they were together with Harden, Durant, and Westbrook. But it's amazing that those teams were all together at one point. Absolutely amazing. Let's switch gears now. Let's go back to the NFL. We got a big football game coming up in the NFC East. You got the Cowboys. You got the New York Football Giants. The New York Football Giants will be without the services of JPP, Jason Pierre-Paul, at least for the regular season. And if they can get to the playoffs, maybe they'll have the services of JPP. But you're the Cowboys at this point in time. You lost to the Giants in week one. Terrence Williams couldn't get out of bounds, didn't get out of bounds, and ultimately that caused you a football game. Dak Prescott's first start, I think he's come a long way since that first start. Ezekiel Elliott, I think he's come a long way since that first start. This is a football team with the Dallas Cowboys that didn't play their best last week against the Minnesota Vikings, but did enough to get it done and ultimately win the game. I mean, they didn't play their best. They didn't play their best against the Minnesota Vikings, but they did enough to get it to do what they needed to do and win that football game. This game against the Giants, it strikes me as a revenge game. Obviously, it's a revenge game from the standpoint you lost to this team in week one, and this was the only team that beat you. So this is an opportunity for you to avenge that loss and beat the only team that beat you in 2016 thus far. I mean, the Cowboys, they're playing some good football, and I expect a big-time effort from this team next week. Or this week, I should say, coming up against the Giants. I really do. I expect a big-time effort. Cowboys already clinched a playoff berth. That's pretty exciting if you're a Cowboy fan. At this point in time, 2.5 up on the Seahawks for the best record in the NFC with 4 games left. It's pretty much a foregone conclusion that the Dallas Cowboys will win the NFC East. Yes, that will happen. It's also a foregone conclusion that the Dallas Cowboys will win. Will win and have the best record in the NFC East. You win this week against the Giants, you clinch the NFC East. And, you know, the Cowboys, what a story. What a remarkable story. Just from the standpoint of who knew. I know Dak Prescott played well in the preseason, but who expected him to be playing at this point of the year and then playing at the level that he's playing at this point of the year? I mean, if you look at Dak Prescott, he has not hurt his football team. He's not hurt his football team. I mean, 19 touchdowns, but only 2 interceptions. That's not hurting your football team. So he has not hurt this team this whole year. Really hasn't. And so the way he's played And maybe the offense could be a little more explosive with Tony Romo. But Dak Prescott has proven that he's big time. He's proven. It doesn't seem like anything bothered this kid. He's got a great mental makeup. A great mental makeup. Really does. And so, the reality is, Cowboys win this week. They win the NFC East. And it's going to be pretty soon before they, you know, ultimately get or clinch the best record in the NFC. And then the playoffs, at this point, it's looking like, and I think pretty much a foregone conclusion, the playoffs are going through Dallas. The playoffs are going through Dallas. Do I think the Seahawks can beat Dallas in Dallas? Yeah, I think they can. I think they can. But also, even with that being said, well, here's the thing. The Seahawks now, they take a hit because now you lose the services of Earl Thomas. You know, Earl Thomas hasn't missed much football over the years. Earl Thomas, one of the best safeties in football. You know, he's one of the best safeties in football. And he made up that legion of boom. Boom! He had a 108-game consecutive start streak. And now, with the injury now, he's out for the year. And that's a big blow for the Seahawks. Got Cam and Richard still. But Earl Thomas is a playmaker, man. Big-time playmaker. So now you're going to lose the playmaking abilities of Earl Thomas. I mean, that's huge. That's huge. And the thing about injuries, they are the great and ultimate equalizer. But the playoffs are going through Dallas. And if I would happen in terms of who's going to be there in terms of that NFC Championship game, I think we're going to see the Cowboys and the Seahawks. I think we're going to see a pretty darn good football game. Don't sleep on the Lions. They're playing some good football at this point and getting some good defense now. I mean, the issues with the Lions for me was what I saw defensively. But now they're getting some good, good defensive play. You know, the defense is playing a lot better. And obviously you're getting what you get from Matthew Stafford in that offense. That big-time Lions offense, who's been making a lot of plays. Matthew Stafford played like one of the better quarterbacks in football. And I always said, you can do a lot worse than Matthew Stafford. A lot worse than Matthew Stafford. Well, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be fun. But I think it's wide open. I mean, I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that the Cowboys are going to be an NFC Championship and beyond. But I also think it's going to be, you know, it's going to be interesting playoffs. This Cowboy team is not invincible. That Patriot team in the AFC is not invincible. So the playoffs are going to be fun. A lot of fun. Obviously, when you come into the playoffs, the thought, the belief, the idea is that the team with the best record is the team that's going to be the team to beat. But with that being said, there have been many years, many times, where the team with the best record wasn't the team that represented their conference in the Super Bowl. We've seen it. So it's not. So that's because the Cowboys have, you know, Gordon probably get home field advantage. And just because the Patriots or whoever it's going to in the AFC is pretty wide open at this point, just because that particular team is going to get home field advantage does not mean that that is the team that's going to win it all when it's all said and done. Or that's not the team that's going to be in the Super Bowl. That's not going to be the team that represents their conference in the Super Bowl when, in fact, it does happen. We'll see. It's going to be very interesting, man. It's going to be a lot of fun. And you love it. You love it when these playoffs are wide open. So it's always fun to have a wide open playoff. And that's what you're going to have here, a wide open playoff. You can't ask for anything more than a wide open playoff. Because if you look at the NBA, you could argue that the playoffs or the NBA Finals, what's going to happen in those NBA Finals is pretty much a foregone conclusion. Not what's going to happen, but who's going to be there. Pretty much a foregone conclusion. Probably going to be Golden State. Probably going to be the Cleveland Cavaliers in the Super Bowl. Not the Super Bowl, the NBA Finals. Just going back to what I was saying before. Last year, the two best teams, record-wise, in each conference, both made it to the Super Bowl with the Broncos and the Carolina Panthers. The year before that, both teams who led their conference went on to play in the Super Bowl. That's 2014. 2013, both teams, Broncos and Seahawks, both made it there, and the Seahawks trounced the Broncos. 2012, both the number one seeds did not make it to the Super Bowl. Broncos didn't make it. The Falcons didn't make it. Ultimately, the fourth seed in the AFC made the Baltimore Ravens, and the second seed in the NFC, the San Francisco 49ers made it. But over the past, over the past 3 years, the top two seeds have made it to the Super Bowl over the past 3 years. Will that mean anything this time around? That should be interesting. We'll see. We'll see how that works. But I will say this. It's going to be fun. It's going to be a whole heck of a lot of fun. I can't wait to see it. I want to now go to the Will Smith trial out there in Louisiana. Trial now's in its fifth day out there. And the trial that's interesting from a lot of different viewpoints. I mean, you just had the situation with Joe McKnight, similar situation, road rage type of situation, where the man, Nish Gasser, his last name, I don't have his first name, I'll get that in a moment, but he was sent home, wasn't charged right away, released right away. And then conversely, you had the situation with Cardell Hayes, the guy involved with the shooting of Will Smith, where he was, locked up, given a bail, so on and so forth. So if you look at this case now, it's going to be interesting to see how this thing, plays out. You wonder now, did they move a little too fast in terms of how they handled this situation? It seems like, first and foremost, it's an unfortunate situation. It's an unfortunate situation. Most definitely an unfortunate situation. And you look at Cardell Hayes, the dude had a $1.7 million bail. I mean, $1.75 million. In a situation, the more I'm reading about it, a situation that strikes me as a situation that obviously could have been avoided. obviously could have been avoided. You know, alcohol may have played a role, you know, in this particular situation, but it seemed like a situation that could have been avoided. And, you know, you get the sense, you wonder, you know, just reading about this and, you know, hearing various opinions on it, that if, in fact, the roles were reversed and Will Smith, Cardale Hayes, and Cardale Hayes was Will Smith, whether it would have gotten to this point. Whether, you know, Hayes would have been charged. You wonder. I mean, I think celebrity, is definitely going to be huge in this. I mean, Will Smith definitely had some huge ties to that New Orleans area. Played there and stayed there after he played. So, it's a case that's obviously sad. It's just sad. I mean, it's the only way you can, it's just sad. To see a man, you know, to see a man die, to see a man, you know, with a family and a man who, I mean, it's just sad to see. It really, it's just a sad story to see a man with a family, I mean, Will Smith had a family and, you know, had a wife, had kids. It's just sad to see a man just die in that manner. And something that could have been avoided, most definitely avoided. And unfortunately, it wasn't. This case is going to be interesting to see how this thing plays out. You know, just based off of what I'm reading, it you could definitely think about, okay, the guy did shoot him from the back, but maybe Will Smith was going to his car to get a gun. Will Smith was the aggressor, according to witnesses. You just wonder how this thing is going to play out. But it's you know, the case aside, you know, I can talk about the case and details of the case and, you know, say maybe Hayes should get off. I think Hayes is eventually going to get off. I just think it's going to be end up being a self-defense situation. But in terms of how, why this happened, you know, you watch the video, Smith hits Hayes, Smith just rides off, Hayes drives behind, taps Smith, and then it's on. You know, and then it's on at that point. But initially, if you look at it from that standpoint, you know, Hayes didn't necessarily cause the initial accident, but he did hit Will Smith after he chased him down in his car. So it's going to be interesting how it plays out. And I wonder, I'm almost leaning toward Hayes getting off again. I could be wrong. But just based off of what I read, I'm kind of leaning towards Hayes getting off. But here's also the thing. And I talked about this last week, and I'm going to talk about it this week. You've got to be careful when it comes to these road rage incidents and situations, because you don't know what you're going up against. You don't know who has what. You don't know what the mental makeup is of certain individuals, of certain people. You don't know. So because you don't know, you never know what you're going to run into, and you never know what the problems, the type of problems that could arise. So I look at this particular situation. It's unfortunate. It's sad. But it did not have to happen. Sadly, it did. Sadly, we're at this point. And no matter what happens, two lives will forever have been changed. You know, Cardale Hayes, we'll always remember that day. And Will Smith is no longer here to see another day. Second hour, Go For It starts now. power code for it, starting right now. In this hour, we're going to be joined by Jakeem Grant. He was actually on the Undrafted series on the NFL Network. Miami Dolphins wideout Jakeem Grant. Great story, interesting journey, but he's here in the NFL. We're going to talk about the Dolphins and their tough loss against the Ravens and what's next for the Miami Dolphins moving forward. A team that was on a six-game winning streak was playing some pretty good football. Pretty good football. Before they ran up against the Baltimore Ravens. I mean, the Baltimore Ravens now, I mean, they smacked them. I mean, they beat them down. They gave them an absolute beatdown in that particular game. 21-0 at one point, and they just beat them down from there. They beat them down. But let's go to Carmelo Anthony now. And Phil Jackson. Sometimes with Phil Jackson, man, it's just he just needs to shut up. You know, just stay in your executive seat. Shut up. You know, you just say too much. Just talks and talks and talks and talks. And, you know, just you talk too much, Phil. You know, he's talking to CBS Sports Network, and he talked about Carmelo Anthony. And Jackson said, quote, Anthony can play the role that Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant played in terms of triangle offenses. But he said, Anthony sometimes breaks a team rule by holding the ball too long. Carmelo a lot of times wants to hold the ball longer than we have a rule. He went on to say, if you hold it past 2 seconds, you benefit the defense. So he has a little bit of tendencies to hold it for 3, 4, 5 seconds. Then everybody comes to a stop. This is one of the things we work with. But he's adjusted to the triangle. He knows what he can do, and he's willing to see his success. And so I just feel like, you know, Phil Jackson just needs to shut up sometimes. I mean, this is your best basketball player. This is your best player. And I know you got him under contract, so Melo ain't going nowhere. But, I mean, you want to have, you would think, a good relationship with your best player, your superstar. But maybe there's a method to the madness here with Phil. Maybe there's a method to the madness. Maybe Phil is you know, throwing these shots here, throwing these shots there to inspire Melo to get to that certain level, that next level, that championship level. Maybe that's what Phil's doing. Maybe it's a little Jedi mind trick that Phil Jackson is playing here and trying to maybe get under Melo's skin, but in the process of getting under Melo's skin, trying to motivate Melo to be a better player. There's nothing, I mean, if that's your method, there's really nothing wrong with that. But I think that's something hopefully Phil has said to Melo before Phil has said it to everybody else. I hope that's the case. I hope that's the case. And so it's just Melo's like, quote, I really don't know kind of where he's coming from with those comments. He wants to talk about it cool. If he doesn't cool, in my eyes, it's over to me. I mean, Melo's kind of taking the high road here. And I think it's the only road you take in this particular situation. Because I think if Melo comes at Phil in a different way, in a different manner, it's going to turn to a situation that's not going to favor Melo. And I think it's going to be a situation that will work against Melo. In this particular situation, it's best to shut up. It's best to just play basketball and let your basketball game do the talking. Let your basketball game do the talking. I mean, come on. I mean, he was asked by a reporter, and Melo wasn't having nothing out of it. He was done. Interview over. Done. Then Melo, you know, on Instagram, talking about ego and things of that nature when it comes to Phil Jackson, you know. And so Melo's throwing a little shot. I mean, I don't know if it's a little shot, but hey. Melo's, I think, is just he's throwing, you know, he just responded. Just responded to Phil on some level. But I think the best course in this particular situation is to just be quiet. Don't even address it. Just move on with your life. It's just the best course of action. You can't win. You can't win. You can't. Just looking at his Instagram, he's saying ego is the only requirement to destroy any relationship. So be a bigger person. Skip the E. Let it go. Melo's letting it go. He's letting it go. He has a picture of Muhammad Ali. Slings and arrows being thrown at him. You know, and Ali just unfazed by it all. But I would say this, why even throw, and it's why do that? You know, be a bigger person, address it with Phil, talk to Phil, man to man. I know Phil was wrong in this situation from my standpoint, but for you, man to man, do what you got to do. But Phil's not wrong if Phil feels like this is a Jedi mind trick, if this is some Zen or some kind of whatever Phil is doing to play with Melo's mind. To make Melo a better player. I don't know. Melo obviously doesn't like it. And so since Melo doesn't like it, maybe Melo can use it as motivation to not hold the ball as long as he does. Maybe. But Melo... I thought Melo made the mistake of even signing in New York, to be honest with you. I thought Melo should have kept it moving and went to Chicago, but also know why Melo did what Melo did and stayed in Miami, not Miami, stayed in New York. Because Melo knew that there was a payday there, a payday in New York, and he knew that New York could give him the most money. And so when you have a situation where you choose money over, can you say championships? This is what you get. Now, you can argue maybe the Knicks are growing something or building something. I mean, you do have Kristaps Porzingis, who's playing some big-time basketball. Derrick Rose is doing his thing. Maybe Phil has built something in New York. Let's go back to the NFL. We're going to bring in a guy now, Jakeem Grant of the Miami Dolphins. Miami Dolphins, again, coming off a tough loss. But, you know, they're a game behind the Broncos for that final wild card spot, that sixth and final wild card spot. We'll see what the Dolphins can do over these next few weeks. But let's bring him in, Jakeem Grant. Let's bring him in now. Miami Dolphins wide out. Jakeem Grant. Jakeem, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Doing well. Thanks for joining us. And Jakeem, you guys had a rough outing against the Ravens. 38-6, beat down, snapped your six-game losing streak. What happened on Sunday?
I would just say, you know, they were a great team. No, don't get me wrong. But I would just say that it's nothing. I just feel like we shot ourselves in the foot. I feel like, you know, if we continue to play like we've been playing when we were winning on a six-game win streak, then we would have came out rolling. But honestly, it was just, you know, we just had a bad game.
So let me ask you this. Is it one of those type losses where you just kind of throw it away, don't watch the film of it, and just move on?
I feel like it is one of those games, but we also need to go back and look at that game so that this game doesn't happen again. So we can go back and make those corrections and see that, you know, we don't like that feeling. You know, that feeling that we were having, that six game win streak, and we were beating guys, and we had that great feeling, you know, at the end of the day. That's the feeling that we want to feel. But that feeling that we had in the locker room a couple of days ago was, you know, we didn't like that at all. And so, you know, this is one of those games that, you know, better now. I mean, better sooner than later. And so now we got that out of our system, and now we're ready to roll and get everything, you know, get back on our winning streak.
Now, Jakeem, obviously, like we said, you had that 6-game winning streak after starting 1-4. A lot of guys counted you out. A lot of people counted you out after 1-4. How did you guys turn it around?
Like I said, nobody was with us. You know, only the people that was riding with us is the people that are on our team, and that's the whole mentality that we had. You know, everybody's counting us out. We like being the underdogs because at the end of the day, the underdogs will want to get the last laugh, and so we want to go out and, you know, prove people that, you know, Miami Dolphins are here, and we're going to stay here, and we're going to show up, and we're going to play.
We're talking the Dolphins wideout, Jakeem Grant. One of the reasons you guys turned it around is to play Ryan Tannehill, your quarterback, who had 9 touchdowns and only 1 pick during that 6-game winning streak. He started slow, but now he's balling right now. Talk about the play of Ryan Tannehill.
Man, Ryan Tannehill is let's start off by saying he's a tremendous guy, and he's a very outgoing guy, and he's a leader on our team. And, you know, y'all might think, some guys might think he started off on a bad foot, but, you know, let's say, our season started off on a bad foot, but Ryan stepped up and he showcased his leadership, and he got everything rolling with our offense. You know, even when it was Jay, you know, rushing for 200 yards and with Ryan in the air, you know, throwing the ball and just, you know, showing them that he could put up points and he could do a lot of things. You know, Ryan is a tremendous quarterback. And, you know, I would go to battle with him any day of the week. And Ryan is, you know, that's my quarterback. And I love that guy. And like I said, I would go to war for that guy, and he would do the same for me. And, you know, and everybody makes mistakes, and nobody's perfect. And Ryan is on his way to be a very great quarterback, a very great quarterback.
Your first touchdown was a thing of beauty. 74-yard punt return, 4 touchdown against the Titans. Take us through that moment when you scored your first touchdown.
Man, I would say it's unbelievable, you know, because as a little kid, you always, you know, dreamed of being in the NFL. But actually to just score your first game touchdown and, you know, in the NFL is no better feeling, you know, and like a lot of emotions was rushing through me. You know, I couldn't even, I talked every day. I was telling everybody, you know, if I score, I'm going to do this celebration dance. But I couldn't even do that because it was just like when I got there, you know, it was like, man, I'm here, you know, and I made it to the NFL and I scored my first, you know, NFL touchdown. And I'm like, you know, what I do, you know, I was just fuming with, you know, joy. And I just didn't know how to express it. But, you know, it'd be like, you know, just saying in my head, like, I knew this day would come. I knew this day would come. And so, and it did. And, you know, it's, like I said before, it was no better feeling.
So what dance did you have planned? What did you have planned?
I don't know. I wanted to, you know, do the you know, the folks that everybody does. Okay. You know, it kind of, you know, get up there with, you know, Odell, you know, how he be doing the dance move and kind of like, you know, I don't know. I mean, I had a lot of dance moves going in my head. And I was like, I couldn't decide from the two, so I didn't dance at all, you know. So, but, I mean, you know, like I said, I couldn't decide, you know, because I was in the end zone. I just scored, and that was my first touchdown. So I was like, man, I don't know what to do. You know, I'm just going to keep this ball in my hand and just take it on home with me.
We're talking to Dolphins wide receiver Jakeem Grant. And Jakeem, like we said, you had some good moments, that 74-yard punt return for a touchdown. You had some bad moments, including 3-muff punts against the Chargers. But as a whole, how would you rate your season thus far?
I would say as a whole, you know, I've done okay. You know, a lot of people would say, yeah, he's done good. You know, he's been returning punts and, you know, doing good, you know, averaging good yards. But to me, I've done okay. I expect I'm my worst critic, you know, and I want to be – way better than, you know, anybody would see me being in. And, you know, I feel like, you know, I still have a lot to prove in these, in the, going at the end of this season, going into, you know, the last stretch of our season. And I feel like, you know, I got a lot more to, you know, show the fans and just, you know, show myself, most importantly, that, you know, that those mistakes that I made in, you know, in the other half, the first half of our season, that those mistakes won't be made on this back end. And so, and just so far, I feel like it's going okay. And I can still turn that around and have a great season.
So let me ask you this. 5'6", 170-plus pounds, obviously not ideal height for the NFL. I just look at your journey off the field. It was rough as well. I mean, you were shot as a child, stabbed in the club in 2014, but you made it, man. How?
I would just say my willingness and determination. You know, I always told my mother, like, you know, one day I'm gonna make it to the NFL. You know, and I always used to tell her, like, and she was like, "You have to get me that good degree." And I was like, "Yes, ma'am, I'll get you that degree. But I'm going to make it to the NFL no matter what nobody tells me, and no matter what, you know, bumps in the road that come along, you know." And that's just been my whole mentality. I've been through so much as a kid, and I watched my mother go through so much raising me and my brothers, and just what she went through. I had to tell myself, you know, your mom doing this and this for you. You have to do something in return, you know, to, you know, help your mother out and help, you know, your family out, you know, and things like that. And I seen my mother, her willingness to take care of me and my brothers all by herself. You know, she kept us with the finer things. She got us, you know, video games when, you know, she got us the PlayStation when the PlayStation came out, the Xbox when the Xbox came out. You know, she kept us up with, you know, the electronics and all of those things, just kept us up with everything. And I felt like that was outstanding for a single mother raising three grown men by herself with nobody to help. And so that instilled in me, like, hey, Jakeem, you have to, you know, go out there and push yourself as hard as your mother pushes herself to raise y'all three. It wasn't easy for her. You know, I feel like me and my brother made my mother hell. And ideally, you, that would come from, you know, raising three grown men. But, you know, we loved our mother. We treated our mother with respect. And she raised us to the man we are today. And I feel like, you know, this is the reason why I work so hard, because what my mother done for us is unbelievable. And I feel like, you know, I have to pay that back to her, even though she doesn't expect anything in return. And I feel like I want to give my family, my kids, the things that, you know, my mother gave us, and plus more, because now I have, you know, the funds to do that, and I have the funds to, you know, help my mother out every once in a while, and, you know, just to say, hey, mom, hey, mom, I'm gonna move you out, you know, I'm gonna get you your own house one day, and I just want you to just continue to hang in there with me.
For sure. So let me ask you this. You were shot as a child. Where'd you get shot?
I wasn't shot. My oldest brother was shot when I was in high school. My oldest brother was shot in the neck, and I was stabbed underneath the chin.
We're talking to Dolphins wideout Jakeem Grant. You survived it, man. I'm glad you're here. Let me ask you this. We saw your journey, your story on Undrafted on the NFL Network. How was that experience for you?
That experience was, you know, it had highs and lows. That's what I want. I can say about that. You know, it was times, you know, where I came out of the season with one of the top stats in the nation, and they're still overlooking me because of my size and this and that. And, you know, I'm seeing guys go get invited to the combine that, you know, I torched, and guys that I had way better stats than, and this and that. And so I'm thinking in my head, like, you know, that kind of thing came to myself, like, am I really good enough? Or, you know, and, you know, those negative thoughts came to my head. And then I started to tell myself, you know, man, forget that. I'm good enough. You know, I'm more than good enough to play in the NFL. And so, and I just kept, you know, I kept pushing it, you know, and when the combine came around, I was like, man, I didn't get that combine invite. It really, you know, it ticked me off, because as a goal of mine, I want to go to the combine, you know, and break Chris Johnson's record, because Chris Johnson is the guy that I looked up to when I was growing up playing football because of his speed and because I pride myself on speed. And so I just, that added more fuel to the fire for me to, you know, go out there and prove them that, you know, my speed is unreal, you know, and I just want to go and show people that I can, you know, I can break the clock if you tell me. And so, and that's what my whole motivation was, you know, doing training and on my path to the NFL, you know, and it was just like every day I went home after I got done training for the day, and I looked my kids in the eyes and I was like, you know, and I have to do this for them, you know, and because sure. It was hard for me, you know, getting those scholarship checks and taking care of my kids and surviving off that little, you know, that little bit of money. It was extremely hard. And so I was telling myself, you know, I don't want to go through that. I hate going through that, you know, just having to make ends meet just to, you know, make sure my family is taken care of. And
right.
and that just, you know, motivated me to push even harder. And so when I went to Pro Day, you know, I was like, here's the time. Here's the stage. You know, you've been practicing for this moment your whole life, and here it is. And the opportunity presented itself, and I went out there and I gave it my best. And when the draft day came and Dolphins selected me, when all the other teams passed me up, and so I owe everything to the Miami Dolphins, and that's why I'm going to continue to be the best that I can be, because they took their chance on me, and I want them to know that, you know, I'm going to ride with you guys just like you guys rode for me, and y'all pulled a chance on me. So every team that didn't, you know, pull the card on me, I'm going to make them pay for it.
All right. We're talking to Dolphins wideout Jakeem Grant. I want to ask you this now. Cardinals coming to town next week. Obviously, you guys want to get back on your winning ways. How do you get back to your winning ways?
I say we go back to the basics. What got us there at the first beginning? You know, just doing the little stuff. Because I feel like it's not the big it wasn't the big things in that game that killed us. It was just the little things. The little things that we weren't doing. The little things that wasn't clicking is the reason why the game didn't go the way we wanted it. So if we get back to the basics on the and win the games like we started off winning, then we're going to get rolling. And I feel like nobody can stop us. We stop ourselves. And so I feel like once we get those things corrected, you know, who knows?
Obviously, you got the Cardinals this week. You got 4 games left. Right now, you're a game behind Denver Broncos for that 6th spot. Let me ask you this. End of the day, you think you guys can sneak into the playoffs?
I believe we can, but I feel like that isn't our approach. We're not worried about, we need to make it to the playoffs. We're worried about winning that next game. And when we think like that, that's what make us, you know, so good, because we're not thinking ahead. We take it step by step by step. And so we're only focused on one game. And when that next game comes up, we're focused on that game. We're all in for this game. So we're willing to ride and die for that game and see what the next week brings.
And we shall see. 4 games left, 1 game behind. In terms of that 6th and final spot for the playoffs, we'll see what the Dolphins can do in these next 4 weeks. Fans, hit this man up on Twitter @_thedreamishere and support all the great things going on with Dolphins wideout Jakeem Grant. Absolute pleasure talking to you, sir. Wish you nothing but the best of luck moving forward. Let's do it again.
Yes, sir. Let's do it again. And I really appreciate you having me on the show.
Take care. Best wishes to you.
You too. Thank you very much.
Jakeem Grant, wideout for the Miami Dolphins. Absolute pleasure talking to him. Can't wait to talk to him again. Now, we had last week the college football playoffs. Didn't get a chance to talk about that. Get out, we'll talk to that before we get out of here. Obviously, if you look at how it went down, the committee favored the one loss over the two losses. And I think if we look at it, and I think some interesting points were made during that selection show, but one of the things that kind of stuck out to me was obviously Penn State. They were a team that started a little slow. You know, there was talk that James Franklin could be fired, but they finished strong. They finished strong, 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 and were able to win and beat Ohio State. But what killed them wasn't the loss to Michigan. It was the loss to the Pitt Panthers. And the reality is, and Pitt's a decent football team. Pitt's decent. So beat Clemson. So Pitt's not a bad football team. You know, 8-4, but a team that beat Clemson, a team that can score, fill it up. But they beat Clemson. But Pitt is not a bad football team. They scored 76 points against Syracuse. Not saying Syracuse is great, but I'm saying it just goes back to how great that offense is. But anyway, if Penn State would have played somebody else other than Pitt and got that victory, played a softer opponent and got that victory, they would have been 11-1, and ultimately they would have been in the playoffs. But the reality is the committee said one was better than two. But the way things worked out, you know, obviously one was better than two. And I couldn't see Penn State leapfrogging Washington after Washington won their particular football game. I just didn't see it happening. And so Penn State, too little, too late for Penn State, but they ended strong. And heck, I mean, they look good down the stretch, man, including that comeback victory against Wisconsin in the Big Ten championship game. But the committee got it right. Alabama and Washington, and then, you know, Clemson and Ohio State, which is going to be a good one. I'm interested to see that one. Can't wait till December 31st, New Year's Eve. I actually think that's a bad day for it. I just think it is. I don't know how many people are going to be sitting down watching football. I know they had some rating issues last year, but we'll see how that plays out. It is New Year's Eve, and people are preparing for the party, preparing to go out and about. So it's difficult, but we'll see. I want to thank Jakeem Grant for stopping by. I also want to thank Rex Burkhead for stopping by. You can listen to this show and other great shows, blogtalkradio.com/pgame, where you can listen to this show and other great shows. Send messages to the show on Twitter at GoFortGant. GoFortGant. For everybody here, go for it. We hope you have a great weekend. See you later. Take care. Bye.